YPG's desert rats tested weapons of war so they'd work when soldiers' lives depended on them. Thousands of veterans walk the earth today thanks to their work. After decades of service, all that's left is testament. Desert Rat Testament is a monthly anthology that collects the stories and recollections of retired Yuma Proving Ground employees of decades-long service. Hello, I'm Mark Schauer. The son of a World War II veteran who worked for AT&T, Robert Philby attended Norwich University, the oldest private military school in the United States, and married his wife Nancy a week before he went on active duty. His final post in a distinguished Army career was as commander of Yuma Proving Ground from 1996 to 2000. The Philbys stayed in Yuma upon his retirement from the Army, where he stayed active in the community and was inducted into the Arizona Veterans Hall of Fame. Colonel Philby, what was the state of Yuma Proving Ground when you first took command in June of 1996?
The installation was still growing. It wasn't as well developed as it is now. In the 22 years since I've retired, the installation, folks have been taking care of it.
I suspect a lot of folks that have taken command of Yuma Proving Ground may not have known exactly what they were getting themselves into. Jurisdiction over all the extreme weather testing in the Army, it's a pretty big...
You're right. You're absolutely right. Because we've got the extremes of testing. It's the desert here, the cold in Alaska, and at that time we had the tropics in Panama. The other thing that I inherited from Rick Walker, my predecessor, was the 410s. It came under his watch, and there was an undertow that I would roll it back and we'd go back to 5/8. And I listened. And quite frankly, that's one of the smartest things that occurred here. When you think about it, a 10-hour day was the norm, but you were looking at overtime on either end of it. You were looking at working Fridays overtime. You were looking at working Saturdays. And special occasions, you were working Sundays. So the contractor or the tester came in, and they'd have a test set up, and they would have it booked in for maybe 10 days or 15 days. And when they went to 410s, it made sense because your duty day, setup time, range time, you still got the full 8 hours on the range or 9 hours on the range, but you also had regular time for setup and teardown. But what the workforce saw was that Friday was the day, quote, off, where you could take care of all your personal business. You could get doctor's appointments. You get your car worked on. I mean, the myriad of things that people who live here do to live here.
Yuma Proving Ground was absolutely in the vanguard on that.
It was. And there were some other organizations that changed, that went to every other Friday. They were off. The trick was, are they off this Friday or not? You never knew. I used Friday as a great work day because it was quiet, relatively quiet. So I could get a lot done here, both at the office here and my quarters, because I had a, quote, office there. But the 410s were great, and I continue to believe they're great. And many, many organizations have picked up the 410s. So yes, that was one of the things that I walked into and I thought, whoa, and then watch and look and talk. And I thought, we're not rolling this back. This is great.
What was your impression of the workforce after you'd been here a few months?
The workforce here is here because they want to be. The workforce stays here because they want to stay here. So many other organizations within the Department of Defense, within the Army, people come in, do their 2 years or 3 years and leave. You don't have the continuity. You don't have the corporate knowledge.
Was it challenging to lead an overwhelmingly civilian workforce?
Yes. And I had been exposed to that in the Pentagon. And prior to that, my command in Germany was primarily working with foreign nationals, Germans, Belgians, Netherlands, Nederlanders. So I had gotten used to and was able to work with the civilian workforce, whether they were DOD, Department of Defense, or Department of Army civilians, or as it was overseas, foreign nationals. So from that standpoint, yes, but there's always the wrinkle. There's always the person that says no because. And quite frankly, I like those no because, because then you don't get into groupthink. And someone asks that question, you say, nah, don't go away. But you say, whoa, that's another point of view. Whoa, that may be the way to do it. Or let's look at that.
I tell folks that over the last 4 or 5 years, YPG has been at the forefront of the Army leadership in a way that's unprecedented. We've had the last 3 Secretary of the Army's visit us. We've had the Chief of Staff, Vice Chief of Staff of the Army multiple times. But the only time YPG ever had a Commander-in-Chief visit was during your command.
Yes, and that was a Commander-in-Chief retired. That was George H.W. Bush, number 41, President 41. He came to visit. You may know that he fought in World War II, and his airplane was shot out from under him off of, in the vicinity of Iwo Jima, and he bailed out, was rescued, and fortunately his life raft drifted away from the other Japanese islands out there, and the submarine rescued him. And what he wanted to do was do a free fall. He wanted to do a free fall because the last time he bailed out of an airplane, he hit his head. He bailed out of his airplane, and as he was rolling back down his plane, he hit his head on the stabilizer, the rudder. He had a helmet on, so it didn't knock him out, but it was kind of one of those, oh, darn, hit my head. And he decided in his age that he wanted to do a free fall. He wanted to jump. And this was a personal thing. He didn't want a fanfare. So he looked around and he talked with the U.S. Parachute Association, associated with our Golden Knights that train out here. And they thought, YPG. So they came in an afternoon, landed about 2 o'clock in the afternoon at our Laguna airfield, came in on a DC-9, highly modified DC-9 that he'd borrowed from the Wynn family of Las Vegas. President spent the morning training, spent the afternoon training. The idea was I was going to have him for dinner at my house. He put that, he nixed that. He said, no, I don't want to put you out. We'll just have dinner at the officers club. Well, okay. So we had dinner at the officers club with about 60 of my closest friends. We invited the commander from the air station and his wife, my wife and I, and President and Mrs. Bush had dinner. After dinner, he spent the night in one of our VIP quarters just down the road from my quarters. And we're at home, and I get this sense there's something going on. You just get the sense something's going on. So I step out and I look down the street and I go, oh, man. The quarters where he was huge crowd, was outside the quarters. So I said, okay, let's see. Walk down, and there he is, outside, talking to folks. That's the way he was, talking to folks. And it went on for a long time. And finally, one of the Secret Service people approached him and said, Mr. President, you got to get up early tomorrow. You need to cut this off and go to bed. So it was, okay, folks, I'll see you in the morning, da-da-da-da-da, and he went inside. Next morning, they're doing some more training with him. And what do you do with Mrs. Bush? Huh? Well, my wife took her along with some of our MWR people on the river. Then that afternoon, he got ready to jump. That morning he was going to jump. So got him out. They're going out to the drop zone, Phillips drop zone. And the wind starts coming up. And one of the things they didn't teach him was how to dump his chute. And we've got a lot of Golden Knights with their arms in the air and their little meter watching the wind go. And they got some of the U.S. parachute guys with their meters in the air watching the wind go. And finally they said, well, put him in the plane. So up he goes, and one of the wires, so they're talking to him, he jumps, and they're and he was by himself. It wasn't a wind dummy like when I jumped. He jumped by himself, and he had a Golden Knight on one side of him and USPA guy on the other side of him, and they stabilized him, and then they backed away. And the reason I can tell you that is there was another guy up there filming it, so we know what he did. But they backed away, and he's flying himself. And they're talking to him, and he's flying himself. And as he's getting lower, and they're talking to him, they say, okay, this way, and they turn this way, and he turned. They said, okay, pull your cord. So pull the cord. He's under cover, under canopy. Great. He's coming down. They're talking to him, steering him down. And then they finally realized they had to do something because the wind had come up. And you did not want to have the president land and get dragged across the field. So as he's coming down, you've got 4 people approaching him. And as he got closer to the ground, the closer they got. As soon as he touched the ground, they were on him, unhooked his chute, and took it away, and he marched off the field. We closed the event with a thing in the theater. He wanted to meet and talk with the people. People that supported him, the people on YPG. So we had a meeting in the theater so he could talk to them. Front row, Mrs. Bush and her folks, and he's on the stage with me and we're talking. And I present him with a commander's coin, and he's talking again and thanking folks for all. And then he says, you know, I'm going to have to do it again. And as soon as he said, I looked at Mrs. Bush and her mouth dropped. And she just shook her head. And he said, you know why? And I said, why is that, Mr. President? He said, I bumped my head. I said, no. He said, yes. When I got to the end of the ramp, stood on the ramp there, instead of stepping off like they told me to, I jumped. And when I jumped up and hit my head on the door. Again, it was more of a, darn, but I hit my head. So I'm going to have to do it again sometime, someplace.
What, talk about range improvements and infrastructure improvements that took place during your tenure here.
One of the big pushes was the fiber optic. Went fiber optic on the range so that you could go into a firing point or a point and there's a pedestal there and plug in. And your information was zipped right back here to the north end. A big savings as far as time, as far as accuracy. And the whole range was fiber optic. And we were on the cutting edge of putting fiber optics on range. Was take care of the range that way.
There's things like the forward operating base, the AOC.
Yeah, the forward operating base, that was an interesting one, FOB. We had many units that had come out and train here before they'd ship out. And I got to the point where I said, oh, wait a minute. What if we had an FOB here next to the airfield? It would be like they'd see it when they go in country. And they would be able to then go down range to conduct a mission after having planned it in the FOB. They move in, they live there just like they're going to be. We get the Cactus Cafe to bring food out to them. They contract the food. So it'd be just like operating out of country. So we started that FOB, and now it's a pretty significant part of our installation next to the airfield.
That's where Project Convergence 20 and 21 operated out of.
So it's paid off. One of the other things we did on the range, talking about improving the range, C-17 was in its, I don't want to say its infancy, but C-17 was being tested. And one of the things the C-17 had to do was operate off of an unimproved runway. And my son, an Air Force officer at the time, he's since retired, was assigned at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and he was in the PM shop for the F-16, not the C-17. But there was this water cooler discussion that they were having in his building, and the C-17 guys were lamenting about this requirement for an unimproved runway test. And my son shared that concern with me, and I thought, what about someplace out on Cibola? So I said to my son, put the bug in their ear and have them contact YPG. I said, don't use my name. Just put the bug in their ear that they ought to contact YPG and see if they could work something out with a runway on the Cibola Range. Well, C-17 ended up working a project with YPG. C-17 built a runway, built an unimproved runway. How do you like that for the Army, doing that, building an unimproved runway? They built a runway out on Cibola for the C-17 to pass its requirements, or test and pass its requirements, or be able to land an unimproved runway, back up, turn, take off from an unimproved runway.
You retired from the Army in 2000. You and Nancy stayed in Yuma. Your volunteer work, Military Affairs Council, Assistance League of Yuma.
Salvation Army.
You served as a tour docent for the Yuma Visitors Bureau at tours that took place at YPG. Why did you stay in Yuma? Why did you stay so active in the community?
Well, I'll tell you. After 30 years, Nancy and I had been around, and we'd been to places where we'd say, wait till our 2 years is up, or wait till our 3 years is up. We'll do it, but this is a place we'd like to come back to. And there were other places we thought, wow, this is a nice one. Let's keep this one on our list. And when we came out here, it was, whoa, look at this. Very, very, underlined, very friendly military community. It's been great. Our daughter with her and our four grandchildren live in Texas, which is only, what, one time zone away. Our son is now retired and lives in Wichita, Kansas, only one time zone away. So it's great. I mean, we're used to family. How many time zones away are they? So that's great. And we've got some really good friends in Yuma. We're active in the community. As I said, over those 30 years we were in the Army, we spent a lot of time in communities, and they embraced us. We decided we're here. We are now going to give back. We're going to embrace the community that loves the military. So we give back. That's why we're here.
Colonel Philby, thanks so much for sharing your memories with us today.
It's been fun. Thank you, Mark.
For as long as the United States has a military, Yuma Proving Ground will be vital to the national defense. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time on The Testament.